New York comedian Hari Kondabolu. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Kondabolu. He's in the islands. He played Maui last night. He'll be at Waikiki's Blue Note tonight. And he joins us this morning to talk story about his brand of comedy.
Thank you for having me. No, it's good to be here.
So you're actually going to go to the Ninth Island. You go to Vegas after this.
Is that the Ninth Island?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in Vegas next week. I have a feeling that I'm going to enjoy the... I don't think Vegas is going to top what I've experienced here, to be perfectly honest. It's not nearly as beautiful.
I saw your tweet. You said, the scam is on. You're in Maui.
That's what, I mean, honestly, when I told other comedians I was performing in Maui and in Oahu, like the reactions, I mean, people I don't even know that closely were cursing me out. Just like, oh, wow, this stand-up comedy scam has worked. I've made this work in my favor. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we here in the islands, you know, we go to New York, like, oh, we got to go to the Blue Note and catch some acts. And then you're coming here to our Blue Note.
Yeah, I've never performed in the Blue Note in New York, but I get to play the one in Hawaii, and I'm just as happy, if not happier, about that.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, it's great. Well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Now, you actually got started in comedy because you had a kind of a serious day job.
Yeah, I mean, I started in comedy when I was like 17, 18. I was in high school, and it's something I always loved to do. I started doing comedy before I became a socially aware or politically active person. And, you know, after college, I was working at an immigrant rights organization. This is like 2005, a few years after 9/11, after the backlash. So I was working with victims of hate crimes and working with refugees and people who were being detained and deported. So it was heavy stuff. My boss at the time actually was Pramila Jayapal, who's now a congressperson out of Seattle. But, you know, I did comedy at night. It was a young scene in Seattle, a healthy scene, and I did it for fun, and it was something I didn't expect to be a career, because how many South Asians were in the media at the time? How many South Asians were in films and TV? How many South Asians were doing stand-up? So, you know, I didn't see myself as someone breaking any barriers, and so I did it for fun, and I had this job that I absolutely loved, and next thing I knew, I get discovered, I get to be on TV, I have a manager, and, you know, that was about 12 years ago now, and all of a sudden, more than probably 13 years ago now, and you know, I've been doing it ever since, full time.
Okay, so what did your parents say?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing about that. Like, if I had started straight out of college doing stand-up, I think they would have freaked out, but I played it smart where... I went to grad school and got a master's from London School of Economics. I'd had a job before and was on TV twice before I said to them, I think I'm going to pursue stand-up. So as long as you're able to get a graduate degree and
show your parents
and be on TV multiple times to prove to them that this is a viable profession, then it's a little easier to be like, okay, he's not going to be a doctor.
Yeah. And so this isn't your first trip to Hawaii.
No, this is my second. That's why I wanted to come back. And I did an arts and residency with the Shangri-La Museum, you know, the Doris Duke Museum. And I did a show with my brother last time I was here, our Kondabolu Brothers podcast, as well as a stand-up show. And I just loved it so much. I was just obviously in awe of the place, just shocked by the history. Also, the context is so different. Like, to... You know, throughout the mainland, it's like I'm a visible minority, and it's you know, it's a white majority country and the white majority area, and then to come to Hawaii and then all of a sudden not feel like I'm in the minority in the same way is a remarkable feeling. You know, to actually not feel like an outsider in my own country, like I was just in awe of that feeling. And so, you know, in addition to the fascinating history here, as someone who talks about history a lot in my act and colonialism, I mean, this place is ripe with discussions of that. And so I'm just like, you know, to me, this was such a wonderful place. I was actually surprised people even came to my show last time. Just I'm like, it's so beautiful here. Why would you want to see somebody talk? Like, you know, if I had the choice between going to the beach and seeing somebody talk, I'd go to the beach. Right. Not to say you shouldn't come see me at the Blue Note tonight at 6:30 at 9. I'm just saying that, you know, if for me, I can't imagine wanting to be indoors, but I also know if you live here, it's probably a little different.
Yeah, you know, and because the mainland is a long ways away, it's really cool when we've got good acts in town, you know, to support that, so we get keep the pipeline going.
Yeah, no, I mean, for I think any artist, this is a dream gig, and it's one that, you know, I feel like I've been here a few days. I did a show in Maui. I'm relaxed. Now the only thing is justify the trip by having a good show.
Like, make people laugh.
Make sure you do your job. And I feel pretty confident just because, like, audiences here are extremely attentive and thoughtful and smart. And the experience I've had from my Maui show and from the last time I was here, like, I feel pretty good about it.
Well, I know in one of your bits you talk about how you look like a Muppet working on a PhD, and I was thinking, oh, you've grown a beard since. So you look more like from Cheech and Chong. Right,
a little more like Tommy. Well, I mean, to be fair, the rest of that joke was also about how handsome I am despite that. So that just for full context. Yeah, I mean, like, my style is very professorial. Like, I know that. And for some people, it's like, what's going on? But I do feel like there's punchlines in it. There's tons of jokes in it. So it's just a matter of, like, if you can set through me, you know, be there for me setting it up, you'll get the reward at the end. So I like a patient, thoughtful audience.
And so how are you treated as you go from place to place? I mean, people aren't sure what nationality you are, or how does that work?
You know, it's gotten better. I mean, certainly when I started in, like, 2005, 2006, I think there was a curiosity of seeing me on stage telling jokes without an accent. Do you know what I mean? We're talking, it's not even that long ago to me,
right.
But
you look like a terrorist, but
right, like post 9/11, right? And I didn't even have a beard back then. So, like, the stereotypes, also, like, confronting them when you're on stage is hard, or even having to address what are you within the first minute of being on stage, because that's the elephant in the room for people, is like, why does he look like that? Why is he talking like that? My brother says that during those days, it was almost, for a lot of people, it must have been like seeing a dog talk. Like, you couldn't even imagine the possibility, you know, aside from, oh, also they're going to entertain us. Like, just the idea this person is talking and sharing their experience, first generation who is, you know, born here and actually, you know, being able to share their experiences the way I did, and you know, Aziz and Mindy Kaling and Hasan Minhaj and that first wave did. So, you know, I feel like, yeah, like, now it's a little less like that. I feel like it's less of a shock to see me on stage. And I think the issues I'm dealing with more now is, you know, as much as I'm touring the country all over the place and being able to perform in the American, you know, in the South and on the coasts and in the middle of the country and taking risks, I'm still, you know, dealing now post-Trump with some people not handling it as well. Like, I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is a very liberal place. Middle of one of my shows, a guy stood up and yelled, "Hail Trump." And just the idea that the word Trump is used as a threat, you know, it's very pregnant, has a great deal of meaning in it. And so, you know, that's the new struggle now, the idea of people trying to silence voices of color and people whose points of view historically have been marginalized.
I remember as a kid, my first trip to the mainland, I was 11, and I was riding my cousin's bicycle, and someone yelled out in the truck, "Get off the road, you dirty little Mexican." And I was like, "I'm not Mexican." And then come to find out, you know, you do your DNA, I'm Native American. So it's like, I guess he was right, but I don't think I was dirty that day.
And I don't think he thought about it that much. It's never like, you know, when people say, "Go back to your country," they're not, that sometimes I think you're only saying that because you don't know what country my heritage is from. But, yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, I feel like being on stage and sharing your truth is so important, because that might be the only perspective people have. And so I take the responsibility seriously to share my truth and to be honest up there. And because, like, I remember a time where there were no voices. We just had Apu from The Simpsons. And so for me, this is all icing on the cake.
Yeah, and so we certainly have had lots of heavy news with the impeachment, you know, everywhere on the airwaves and in the newspaper. But if folks want catharsis, they can come and spend some time with you tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much.
We have been having a good time here talking to Hari Kondabolu. You can see him in the flesh tonight at the Blue Note in Waikiki. He has two shows, 6:30 and 9:00.